I may spend my time on other clients that are more profitable, but with her, I know I'm making an impact on her life, her family life, but also on her employees, helping her grow her business. And I'm pretty sure in 1-2 more years, she's going to have a large business that will help a lot of people.
Hello and welcome to the Gross Profit Podcast. My name is James Kennedy. I'm the CEO and co-founder at ProcurementExpress.com. We take the hassle out of managing your SMB spend without buying an ERP, but we're not here to talk about that today. Instead, I have Alina Rivera from Advising Puerto Rico, a CFO, fractional CFO based in, you guessed it, Puerto Rico. And we're going to talk about the tension between commercial success and impact, and how do you build a practice that serves both at the same time, or is it even profitable? We're going to talk about a couple of Alina's favorite clients and their varying levels of impact and commercial success. So Alina, you're very welcome to the show. Maybe you could kick us off by telling us something about you that not many people know.
Thank you for welcoming me. Something that that people don't know about me, I love sports. Well, I guess people know that because I love basketball. But other than that, I love doing missionary trips. So that goes well with my love for traveling and visiting different countries, but in a way that I can help people. So it's both things merge at the same time. And I think that's most of my clients, they don't know that side about me.
Very good. And what was your latest trip or your most memorable trip? What did you do?
It was to Nicaragua. We visited kind of the mountainside of the country, and we helped people put in things inside their houses, like beds, and provide them food also. So we visited different areas and we brought clothes for a lot of kids. And this year we are going in June to Dominican Republic, so our neighboring island, and we're planning on doing the same. So looking forward to that one.
Very good. Okay. Well, creating an impact is clearly something you care about. That's coming through straight away. But before we get into that, let's set the scene and make sure that you have the commercial credentials here to be on the podcast. So I want you to tell me a little bit about your commercial background and maybe give me your biggest commercial brag, what you've achieved. What's your favorite thing in business that you've achieved so far?
Well, I guess one of the things that as an accountant, at least in this region of the world, one of the things that you do, or it's your goal when you work in public accounting, is to be the partner of an accounting firm. And I was blessed being the partner of an international accounting firm at some point, BDO. But I guess my achievement was deciding I'm not going and stay with the stability of that type of job, and deciding to change in some way and going on a separate path. Being a CEO for 2 years after managing a large accounting firm, the advisory department, being a CEO for a small firm, and then now just starting my own business 2 years ago. It was last Monday, I celebrated 2 years with the firm. So I guess one of those things is that every period in your life will help you help your clients in the future. At least that's what happened to me. So with the firm, I managed a department. I was able to work with different type of clients on different industries, doing a lot of business valuation, forensic work, fraud investigations, litigation support, even working with the universities, helping them developing programs for their accounting department. So a lot of different stuff. It's a small island, so you use your capabilities and what you learn to advise clients in different ways. So then I moved to a consulting firm that was small, and that helped me to understand business owner, founders. It's not just established company, where I learned how to work with lot of big clients. Now I was working as a CEO, helping a founder as a partner to grow a small business. So during that period, those 2 years, I learned about the struggles, collections. It's not the same when you have this big firm or you're a small business. So that helped me now with my clients. I understand what they are going through, not only as a business owner, but also because I know, or I learn already what they are going through and how to help them grow their businesses too. So it's been a great transition.
So let me ask you a little bit about your time at BDO. So BDO is one of the biggest firms in the world at this stage. If you get to the partner level at BDO, mm-hmm. a lot of people, that's the end of their career, right? That's the very top. So what was it, what did you have to do to get the partner at BDO? Like, what does it take to get, and how many people were in your organization?
So BDO is the fifth accounting firm in the world. So people know about the big four, and then it's BDO and other mid-level firms. But in here in Puerto Rico, BDO was the largest firm at the time. So it was even larger than the big four. So it was 250 something people. So it was large for the island. We are just 3.2 million people. It was a large firm. And my department has had 25 employees, but also almost 100 contractors at the time. And we were two partners, and my other partner did a lot of business development. She did turnarounds, restructuring, but then I was the one managing the department, the admin side of the department. So it was having a small business and a firm. And the way you grow is learning a lot of different sides of the business, just not just the technical side, but the administrative side, but also working 14, 16 hours a day, 7 days a week, every day, working all the time. And no matter where you are in the world on holidays, you will need to work. So that's one of the things that I decided, even when people may say, oh, you're not that old, I'm 45, but in this time of my life, is, do you want to keep working at that pace? Or do you want to do what you want to love? Because when you are on a large firm, it's not, you have to, every client that comes through the door, you have to work with them. So we said at that point that we make it possible. What do you need? So at this point in my life, I would prefer to decide which clients I want to serve and which services I want to provide, because I did a lot of different type of engagements, learned a lot, those skills I can use for particular engagements. But now I decided, you know, this type of service, I'm not providing those, even if they are very profitable, but I want to just choose my clients and provide the services that I feel that I'm adding value to those clients. And there is a purpose of that.
That's interesting. So I got the impression listening to you speak there that at BDO, they had maybe larger clients. I heard institutions, universities, maybe government. And then you moved on from there to working more with entrepreneurs. Now, those big institutions have a lot of money, right? And that sounds like the easy money to me, rather than dealing with crazy entrepreneurs and all of their schemes and scams sometimes. Give me why you decided to move away from that type of client to entrepreneurs instead?
Well, actually, at this point in my life, working as advising, I just decided that I don't want to have a big firm, you know, grow a big business. I guess that is important for business owners to know. They have to decide which is going to be their path and what they want to do. Sometimes we are under all this pressure that we have to have X amount of million in revenues. No, you have to have this big business. And when I decided to start my own business, I said, you know what? This is my goal. I don't need this anymore. All my goals in terms of a profession is something that I already have on my resume or my curriculum vitae. So now is the time for me to, I have to grow a business in terms of paying my bills. You know, I'm used to a lifestyle, but still I want to have enough also to help other people in when, for example, I'm doing missionary trip. So I feel comfortable doing that, but I don't need to grow a business anymore. So there comes certain pressure with these big clients, and they are going to probably need a larger firms. And also they love having those big names behind their contracts. So for them it's important, but then it's already structured, right? One of the things that I like is a business that is growing. They may not be ready right now to pay, for example, for a fractional CFO service, a recurring service every month, but maybe I can help doing an assessment. So looking at them, they may be excellent in what they do, but the admin side may not be enough for them to grow. So I know I'm going to add value to those type of businesses. And let me tell you, at the beginning, it was complicated because my mindset was, oh, you should do this and this and this. And then it doesn't have to be perfect. Let's start growing slow and making sure I don't have all these controls in place that a small business don't need. So it was a struggle at the beginning.
Yeah, that's interesting. I mean, I feel when I'm dealing with, say, five people on my leadership team, once you get like to 20 and then to 50, you lose contact quickly and it quickly becomes a different sense. Like it's very hard to scale that. And I heard someone else on a podcast talk, I think it was a guy called Daniel Priestley. He's another influencer. He briefly mentioned on a podcast, I think it was Diary of a CEO podcast. He said, well, the ideal business is probably doing 3 to 5 million with 5 to 10 people. And that's, you know, if you can get, that's pretty much the ideal size. And everything beyond that, it becomes, or I certainly don't particularly enjoy having even more people to deal with, you know, and being removed, because you can't have a genuine relationship with, you know, with when, it, you know, 15, 20, in my case, I definitely can't do any more than 5, you know? So, and that's when it becomes just a bit of a blob, I don't know. Like, so how many people are in your firm right now?
Well, I have two, they are not employee independent contractors, and one mm-hmm. that is part-time that provide me community management. So social media, she does my videos, help me with social media, because one of the struggles that we have at the beginning is that we believe as business owner that we need to do everything. So I have to do everything. Mm-hmm. I need everything. I have to have control. Even if I have 20 people, it's difficult for people to do the switch that you're talking about in terms of, oh no, we start as a family. So everyone knows everything that is happening. And now I have these 20 people and I feel that I betraying my core original team, because now I don't have the time to manage. So a business owner needs to understand that if they want to grow, that is going to transition. And the probability that the people that started with you stay with you is low. My experience is that they are just so used to, oh, I know everything of the business. I go with the owner everywhere. There is no structure, so I do whatever I want in a certain way. So when you start growing a business and you start putting policies and procedures in place, and then now you cannot go on holiday whenever you want. You have to let me know 6 months earlier or a year earlier, or yes, you cannot buy anything without approving first. So those employees start to resent you, and then you feel like they are leaving you. And I hate when I read this generic post about, oh, employees, they don't leave the business, they leave bad managers. Well, they have to evaluate them also, you know, the person inside. Are you leaving because I'm telling you what to do and you don't want to? Or is really, they are bad, you know, I have a fair share of my, you know, bad partners in my life. I know how difficult it can be. At some point, I had one partner that I believe I cry every day. And I was a manager at the time, so I wasn't staff, but still, it was horrible. And you know what? I decided to stay. It was kind of a, you know, when you have a couple relationship and, oh, you're great. And today you are amazing. And yesterday I make you cry. So it was kind of toxic. But I love what I do. And I think business owners need to understand, do you want to stay with this new small company? That's fine. 3 to 5 millions. But then are you having 3 to 5 millions and with five people is profitable? Because I know business owners that their revenues is less than 1 million. And then they have 8, 9, 10 employees. Is that profitable? Is not better for you than to have a 500,000 business and just having one employee? So it's this mindset that I think at this point in life, we are looking at too many videos and, you know, hearing a lot of noise from other people, and every business is different. And every person, business owner, is different. So goals are really important. What do you want? What is good for you and your family and your business beside people around you? And then you build on that. This is what I want. These are my goals. This is where I see myself and my business in 3, 5, 10 years. And then with that, then you work with that and create a plan. So people said that, for example, for exit planning services, no, I'm going to wait to prepare an exit plan. It's not about preparing an exit plan, because your best strategy is an exit plan. So starting your business and your strategy should go around that exit strategy. But for that, you need to understand and know what do you want in the future, because you don't know when are you leaving the business. Are you going to die tomorrow? Are you going to get sick tomorrow? Are you going to be burnt out tomorrow? Like a lot of people, it happened that to a lot of people after COVID. They didn't want to work anymore.
Well, yeah, this is interesting, because you can build a business you grow to hate, right? That's possible. And then you, one that you're not enjoying. And on the other hand, if you're not growing or it's not challenging you, you're probably not growing. And then you'll probably learn to grow to hate that too, because so very quickly gets into kind of life coaching territory here. And you think you're hiring a CFO, and suddenly the CFO is asking me to think about my exit plan and my retirement and my impact and everything. So let's start with impact, and I get a sense from you that you're impact driven, and you look for clients which have a mission, if you like. Maybe you'd like to talk about, like, I don't know which way you want to go at this, but like, you know, clients or businesses that you really see that you feel like are making an impact as well as being commercially successful.
Yeah, so they may be a struggle sometimes, because I may have prospective clients that call me, and during that initial call, I know that they cannot afford the services, but I see in them that they are purpose-driven too, that we made a connection, that they may not be able to afford me right now, but they are a growing business that if I can help them, then I can leave an impact on their success too and help them grow, especially when I know that these people is in a way similar to me. So they have a purpose in life. And I, for example, my first client at the firm, she's a business owner in the food industry, and it's business that is growing. And in some way, there is some evolution in the business, because she's growing in the same industry, but in a horizontal way. So she's opening different types of businesses. But at this point, maybe during this transition, she wasn't able to pay a recurrent monthly fee for a fractional CFO. So I knew that I can be an impact on her business and on her life. And it has been great, actually. I've been with her on and off during 2 years. And because I see that for her business is important, but her employees are important. So in an industry where turnaround is really high, her employees stay with her. She's worried about their in their personal lives, how I help them grow. So can we have trainings for them so they know how to manage their finances? Can you help me with that? So those are people that I'm happy to help, because yes, there is purpose versus profit, but how I can assist, help her grow in a way that it may not be a recurring service. It may not be, I may spend my time on other clients that are more profitable, but with her, I know I'm making an impact on her life, her family life, but also on her employees, helping her grow her business. And I'm pretty sure she's going to be in 1-2 more years, she's going to have a large business that will help a lot of people too.
Well, this brings up a topic that actually came up on the last Fractional CFO Mastermind that we ran. I know you attended one as well. And we, in our group, one of the CFOs was saying that, yeah, listen, I'm working with these startups. I want to help them. They're my type of people. I like them. But the subtext was they're going to bankrupt me. Like, you know, like they can't afford me. It's not going to work. What we sort of brainstormed in our group. And if you're interested, by the way, if you're a fractional CFO, you can sign up at procurementexpress.com/CFO Mastermind, where we gather together CFOs and they brainstorm topics like this. And some of the ideas were to, you know, how do you put guardrails around that? Because very easily you can start working with a client. They're financially not strong enough to afford all your services now, but they can begin to expect, you want to work with them, but they can begin to expect, and then you're in an awkward situation where you're either having to let them down saying, listen, I can't do it, or you're devaluing the service that eventually they're going to have to pay for at some stage, you know, because let's say you start doing some work, you do a cash flow projection or whatever, and then suddenly you're like, well, hold on, you want to start charging me for that, but you've been doing it for free for the last 2 years. So how do you, what's your strategy there? Or do you have one?
I think I'm very structured in a way that I always make sure my engagement letter detail exactly what my deliverables are. And we establish some boundaries so my client know, these are my deliverables, this is what you're paying for. So anything outside of that, if I'm not charging you, is because I am not doing it in a way, but make sure that this is what I'm offering you. So once they start just trying to go outside that, it may happen once, you know, they may need assistance in something, but there are two lot of different type of clients. There are those that they may call you and they will say, oh, please charge me the extra hour because I know this is not part of what you're supposed to do. And I have plenty of those that they are great, but they are others like, send you an email and expect for you to respond quickly, or when you measure the time that you're incurring in them, it's a lot more than you were expecting. So that's time for you to sit with them and explain to them, this is a way, this is what we agree upon. And I guess part of the thing is if they don't understand you and they don't respect you as a professional, because I think that's part of the respect, right? If you don't respect me as a professional and know my value, then this is something that we need to discuss. And I'm going to be respectful to you, letting you know that this is happening, that I don't agree with you. And if not, then you cannot be my client. Because at some point, it's similar to what you tell your clients. So if my client's not profitable in a way that is damaging me, then why am I going to stay with them? It has to be a balance. Maybe it's not, when we are talking about profitable purpose, what we are talking is, it's not that I'm looking for a large profit, but it has to be profitable. I have to eat and pay the bills too. So I think that's the balance.
That's the thing. I face this challenge as well sometimes. And sometimes I'll just ask people for, listen, because we sell them purchase order software. I'll say, listen, can you send me a purchase order for this work? And then it's sort of, it's an easier way to set the expectation that, yeah, I want to help you. I want to spend the time, but it's a softer way of saying, yeah, I'm going to have to charge you for this. You know, my old man, my dad, actually, he's a lawyer. And what he has an interesting approach to this, he's, you know, he's in his 70s now. So he's sort of working quite late into life. And he has a lot of clients which have been with him for decades and decades, but they can't afford, you know, they're retired themselves, et cetera. So what he started doing is on a Saturday morning is running a clinic. So, you know, if you want to see him during the week, it's, you know, time and materials like everybody else. But on a Saturday morning, then he has a couple of hours where you can come in and basically it's, you know, free or close to no cost for people. And the clever thing about that is it clearly sets the expectation, you know, like if you want to deal with me on a Monday morning at 4 o'clock, that's going to be a certain price. And then if I'm going to help you out, that's going to be, you know, you're going to come to me on a Saturday, and that's the way he manages it. So maybe there's something that can be done there. So
that's great. That's smart. Obviously, yeah. He's in a different stage of his life. He has the time. He has probably the flexibility. He loves what he's doing. So that's the way he transitioned from a probably very hectic work that he did. But because I'm sure that he would, if he's a lawyer, at some point in his life, he worked lots of hours. So now he transitioned in a way that he can serve people still, but then have clients that can be profitable or that can afford them his services. So there is a balance in that. That's
yeah. Cool. And I sort of puts a boundary around it. Because what I've feared is people get used to, you know, say, okay, well, this is clearly in the clinic. So this is, you know, it separates it. That's what I like about it. So let's move on a little bit now and talk about, you have another client, you know, in construction. I want to talk a little bit more. They, you know, just to show that you're not just you're helping people out all the time and you've got a commercial edge to you. Let's say you've got a construction client that you have worked very successfully with. Maybe you can tell me the story about how you've worked with them and how you've helped them to improve their business.
It's very interesting because the construction industry is like healthcare, that is very specific with specific needs. But at some point in my career, at the beginning, I did a lot of construction claims. So that's tied to litigation support and forensic accounting work. And I learned about the industry, extended overhead, just job site overhead, and all these costs and the way they are structured. And this client came referred to from another person, and I started working with him. And his revenue was $2 million. During the first meeting, usually during the onboarding period of my fractional CFO clients, what I do is I talk to them, we establish goals, make a plan, projections. And I told him, you know what, I think that this year, what's your goal? And he said, well, 2.5 million. I think we can go to 3 million. You want to grow a business and you're just maybe scared, but it's because you don't have the structure. So what you're doing for your procurement process, he's like, well, some days I go through these pages, look at some RFPs, I do the proposals, I send the proposals, I go to pre-meetings, I do all of this. And the first things that we did is I documented a process for procurement. So a recurrent process every day to look for projects, presenting proposals, and we brought another person, and it's an office administrator. She's in charge of doing this process every day. So in his mind, it's not, did you look at the possible projects? No, it's established process. So we documented that process. And the first month that the process was documented, they participated in one big RFP, request for proposal, and they won that. So at the end of the year, it was a 4 million company. So now we start in January and it's your fault. I'm okay with that. But he's a great example, not just how a fractional CFO and the experience can help. It's also an example that now I'm helping them with dealing with the employees, because the new ones, they didn't know the business before. So they are just joining a company with certain structure, and that's what they are learning. But the previous employees, the one that have been there, they are kind of struggling with the implementation of the new processes. And what I tell him and my other clients is you have to wait at least 6 to 9 months to see the actual changes and the impact they produce on your company. It's not going to be, you cannot expect to bring a fractional CFO or any other type of C-level person and expect for the company to change in 1, 2, 3 months. There are going to be low-hanging fruits that you're going to be quick on changing that, but there has to be a plan. So usually what I do is with that initial assessment, I prepare 90 days plans. So there may be 100 of things to change or to implement. So let's go over those that are more important with low-hanging fruit and split it on 90 days plans. So this particular client, our first chunk, 90 days, was working with procurement. So we did that. So now we're working with the operational side. So how they document their projects, their scheduling, but tied to cost and not only materials, but also labor. So it's operational, but it's going to impact finances. So actually today I have a meeting with him and we are going to over all those projects because we want to make sure the cash flow is good. Because one of the problems with business owner, they are growing too fast and then the cash flow is not there. So there has to be a balance for this impact. Mm. But yeah, in this particular client, they already have another office in a year. I've been with him a year and 2 months and new office, double the revenues, and a lot of processes that have been great for the company and for him as a business owner.
Well, you touched on some really important pieces there. Like, that's a great story because delivering impact fast really helps build trust for it's not always possible. This is the trick, you know. There's a business coach franchise called Action Coach, and what they do is when you hire one of their coaches in, the first thing they do is they try and pay for themselves. They look for something, you know, and what they do, their trick is they take out the supplier list and they go down the supplier list and they look for, you know, improvements that can be made around purchasing and who they're ordering from. And then they try and say, okay, listen, they find something, you know, they'll find something, you know, either it could be, I don't know, it depends on the business, I guess, but some supplier, they can make a cost saving, say, listen, I've just paid for the first month of my services anyway. Now, right now, let's focus on your business. And they look for like an easy win like that. So, and you know, maybe they should implement purchase order software as an easy win to tighten up their purchasing processes and reduce working capital requirements, you know. So it hint, hint, if you want to do that in a client, I'm all open for it. So, okay, so that's important, making an impact fast. You also mentioned that you work with this client. It's an ideal client because you're able to make it an impact for them and you made a big impact. And it's great to see. So at the start of the conversation, you said how when you worked in BDO, you worked with a business development partner and you were kind of operations side, and clearly putting processes in place is a skill that you bring to the table. And I think with a lot of typical entrepreneurs, they're frenetic, they're all over the place, they make wonderful things happen, but God knows how, you know, like, because if you look at them, they're too disorganized and they're like how they, sometimes very significant businesses, these guys, and you wouldn't think they could tie their own shoelace or stay focused long enough to do it. So what a fractional CFO, I think a great one, can do is come in, and it's an amazing feeling to have someone come in and put that stability in a business. Like you meant your example there about how you put the process in place for pitching for work and procurement platforms and RFPs. What an amazing way. And if you are an entrepreneur listening to that, that's what a great fractional CFO can do for you. Something that you're just doing through chaos and energy and, you know, fake it till you make it. You bring in a fractional CFO and they put a process in place that suddenly you can take away something that you've made successful once and just repeat it, put it on track, and then you can move on. What a wonderful feeling to be able to do that for businesses, you know.
So, that's right.
Okay, so let's move on a little bit. I mean, Luke, maybe you can tell me a bit about who is your ideal client, like who should really reach out to you now and how can they do that?
Well, if it's, for example, the ideal client would be a client between $1 million and $5 million in revenue that is growing, that maybe they starting to feel they need bookkeeping internally, they want to know our strategy, they need to grow, or they are growing, because most of the time when they arrive, it's because they are having cash flow issues. So it's not late, but usually the client's not thinking about preparing to grow or preparing to administer the business, because it's very common. They are just so good on what they do, they forget the admin side of the business. But usually a 1 to 5 million clients, if it's less than that, but they are growing, then it may not be a recurrent service, but some sort of assessment, looking at helping them prepare a plan so they can grow. And then when they are growing, they are ready to engage a fractional CFO, so preparing them. But yeah, mostly 1 to 5 million would be the sweet spot.
And Puerto Rico or the Caribbean, or what's your...
Yeah, it can be around the world. Actually, fractional CFO services are virtual mostly. And the services we provide, it's, you know, we are virtual, so I can help services around the world. I do also business valuations, and for that, it's just virtual. So it can be anywhere in the world. And as part of BDO, I help clients in United States, Latin America, the Caribbean, and even some in some areas of Europe, like Spain and UK.
Awesome. So I have a common question I ask everyone before I let them go, which is, Alina, who's your business hero and why?
So I was thinking about this. It's Dave Ramsey. I think the way he is purpose-driven to... He started with a business helping churches and people with finances, but in a way he demonstrated that you can have values and be purpose-driven and grow a business, a millionaire business now. So I love what he does with business and people in general. And he's an example for me that this can be done.
Yeah. I love his show, and me and my wife are addicted now. Our YouTube is full of Dave Ramsey shows. He does his that, and he has the marriage advice one, and he has all the different people now. So watch out.
With Dr. John Deloney.
Yeah, John Deloney, exactly. My thing's full of John Deloney. Like, all sorts of craziness in my world. It's like the, whatever, Jerry Springer of financial. It's like slightly classier version of Jerry Springer, you know? Like, but I love it. All right. Lena, this has been great. Thank you very much. And thank you, dear listener. If you're listening this far into the show, congratulations. Your special reward is to be able to go to pyramidexpress.com/newsletter. Now, let me tell you about the newsletter. We've revamped it recently, and we started to focus on recent financial news. And these are examples from the news relating to spend and purchase control, which you can use with your clients. So, for example, this week I highlighted how Macy's had managed to inflate their revenues by $151 million by not having correct processes in place to make sure that his work was reviewed. So every week there's a tidbit, something you can learn, you can bring to your clients to sing from the hymn sheet of improved financial control and how it can help protect your business. So procurementexpress.com/newsletter to get in on that. Alina, this has been great. Thank you very much for coming on the show. I've really enjoyed it.
Thank you for having me. It was a pleasure.